I'm Natalie Silverstein. I'm an author, a speaker, a mom of two teens and one emerging adult, and a passionate advocate for family and youth service. While I was researching my second book, Simple Acts, The Busy Teen's Guide to Making a Difference, I learned about so many big-hearted tweens and teenagers who are volunteering, fundraising, starting nonprofits, and becoming social entrepreneurs and activists. I wanted to hear their stories, and I wanted to celebrate them and share them with the world so that everyone can be as inspired as I am. I hope that after listening to these short episodes, you'll go out into your community and share your light, your talents, gifts, and strengths to help others. Because the truth is, every person can make a big impact, one simple act at a time.
On today's episode of Simple Acts, Big Impact, I'm speaking with another Call for Kindness fellow, Charlie Hirshhorn from Scarsdale, New York, founder of the Friendly Fridge Network. During the early days of the pandemic, Charlie and a friend learned about the community fridge concept and decided to set one up in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, and later a second one in Port Chester, New York. Along the way, Charlie and his team learned some valuable lessons about food scarcity, dealing with government bureaucracy, and always working under the assumption that people have good intentions and are doing the best they can.
Well, hi there, Charlie. So nice to see you. Thanks so much for being on. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the Friendly Fridge Network.
Thanks so much. It's really great to be here. So my name's Charlie. I'm 17. I'm a senior at Scarsdale High School. And in my free time, I love to watch movies. I love to talk about movies. I love to even review movies sometimes. I play volleyball for my school. I like to drive around, be outside. It's my next favorite place to my bed.
Nice. And Scarsdale is in Westchester, New York, right outside of New York City. So tell us a little bit about the Friendly Fridge Network, how it got started, what it means to be a network, how many friendly fridges you have. Just tell us everything, how you got inspired, how it all got started.
Yeah, so I'll start at the beginning, I guess. Around late summer of 2020, I think it was in August, I was really looking for something to put my time into. And I was with my friend and we saw this article in The Cut about these community fridges popping up throughout the city and really New York. I think now there are hundreds of fridges in the city. But my friend who lives in Brooklyn was like, she lives in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. And she was like, my community, we could really use this. There's a huge food insecurity issue in New York City. I mean, in every city, but New York City is... it's extremely close to me, 30 minutes out. So we thought this is something we could really do.
Can you actually clarify what a community fridge is? I don't know if everybody listening will have seen one. I, of course, know them very well because I live in Manhattan. We have them all over the place in different neighborhoods. But it is actually physically a refrigerator that's on the street.
It's just a refrigerator that is plugged in 24/7, accessible at all hours of the day, really to anyone who needs it.
Wow. And it's typically not locked, so it's open. And you're going to explain to us a little bit about how it gets stocked, right? Like it seems like a great concept, but you have to keep making sure that there is food available. You also have to make sure that it's in a position and a place where it has electricity, as you pointed out. So that might be a little bit of a challenge. So how did you go about starting with your first fridge? Like, where did you think about getting it located, buying the actual physical fridge, getting it stocked with the food, all of that good stuff?
Yeah. So I guess really the first thing we did was we typed out some information, some flyers that we could hand to different restaurants and bodegas for when we ultimately would go walk through Brooklyn, stop into places and ask if they'd support our project and let us keep our fridge outside. So after actually a couple no's, a couple maybes, we found our really awesome host, Smoking Fish Deli is what it's called, at 461 Lincoln Place in Brooklyn. And they were ecstatic. They loved the idea. They loved the idea of helping the community. Yeah, so while we were doing this, we actually... We considered that the fridge, the electricity costs money, so we set aside some funds for a stipend. The deli ultimately didn't ask for it, so that was just extra money we could put back into the fridge. And interestingly, all these community fridges that you see, they're painted, so they're super inviting, and everybody knows that they're there and they're for them. While we were walking through Brooklyn, we saw these murals on these walls. They're actually called Underhill Walls is the group, and they're curated by this one guy, Jeff Beller. So I reached out to Jeff through Instagram DMs, let him know that we were starting a community fridge right near the walls. And not only did he donate his time, but he recruited two other artists to donate their time. And that's just at the start. Later, they even wanted to paint the whole wall behind and donate a mural. I think he got five more artists on that, actually. It's an amazing display.
That's amazing. Yeah. So that was your first fridge. And then, and you talked a little bit about the money, the stipend or whatever that you were offering to the bodega, but how did you go about stocking the fridge with the food?
Of course. So yeah, in Brooklyn, we recruited a team of, I think it was between 14 and 21 volunteers. So we would definitely have one a day and often two a day. At this time, we really had our volunteers shopping out of their own pocket, which is not sustainable. And we really didn't like to do that. But unfortunately, we had to do that for a while. We were able to reimburse some through donations to our GoFundMe. Other people would put in random leftovers. Some restaurants would even donate their food waste at the end of the day. Food waste not meaning bad food, just meaning uneaten food. So that was actually our first fridge in Brooklyn. Since then, we've evolved. We started a second fridge in Port Chester, New York, in partnership with a local community center that actually runs their own food pantry. And yeah, our goal with this fridge was to sort of supplement their food pantry, because food pantries are typically non-perishable goods, and you really miss out on like the fresh produce at a food pantry. The great thing about a community fridge is that you can put all these fresh fruits and all these milks and eggs and things that need to be refrigerated. And even better, in Port Chester, we formed this really great partnership with this organization called Meals on Main Street. And they facilitate all this food rescue from big grocery stores like Wegmans, ShopRite. And they have this industrial fridge and industrial freezer. And it's always stocked with whatever these giant grocery stores have to throw out, but is still in perfect condition. At the height of our operation in Port Chester, we were moving over 200 pounds of recovered food into that fridge every day. We're actually in the works of a new initiative involving freezers. I'll get into that later.
Wow. So how do people in the community sort of find out about you? I know that's kind of a silly question. I think once a community fridge goes up, and especially if it's painted really colorfully, like you've suggested that the first one was, I think it gets, word spreads pretty quickly that, you know, that the food is there and folks avail themselves of it. But do you find that people come from the community, they take what they need? I mean, I think the concept of the community fridge is really, and what, you know, I think I've been involved in one down on the Lower East Side in Alphabet City. You know, the hope is that folks will take only what they need, right? That someone doesn't come with a cart and sort of like fill up and take everything so that there's enough for everyone, right? And so I would assume that the response from the community has been, you know, really positive. The folks who need it come and avail themselves of it. But you didn't have to do anything in terms of telling folks in the community that it was there and free and available to them, or did you?
Yeah, no, definitely. We didn't have to do much to let people know that there was free food on the street in a refrigerator for them. Initially, we put up some signs because we were worried maybe people wouldn't show up, wouldn't take the food.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, word travels super fast. Once one person finds out about the fridge, they'll tell all their friends.
Right, right.
And to answer your other question, we have had some issues, unfortunately, with one or two people taking everything out of the fridge. But we kind of view that as if they're taking it all, we'll think the best and give them the benefit of the doubt that they need it all. And maybe they're sharing with their family and their neighbors.
Maybe they're feeding a community of people in their building who can't get out to
exactly.
get the food. But yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, I like to ask this question, is did you find any challenges or any surprises, things that you sort of didn't expect, both in the positive and in the negative? But, you know, I spoke to someone once who had this whole idea and it was this fantastic idea and the whole thing fell apart. So we had to totally pivot and shift. And so I think it's important for teens especially to hear that you have this great idea, but sometimes it's challenging and there are logistical issues. So can you share anything that you learned or any problem that you solved or anything that you were sort of surprised by in this process?
I would love to. And I think this is actually going to surprise you as well. So around, I think it was actually a year ago when we opened our Portchester fridge, and it was doing incredible. It was doing so much good for the community. Like I said, over 200 pounds of food every day, completely free because it was all rescue. But the community, we had never gotten any pushback for the fridge, especially in Brooklyn. I mean, the city looks the other way because it's helping so many people. But one day, the Westchester Department of Health came to the community center to inspect the pool and make sure the pool was up to code. And as they drove in, they passed by our fridge. They got out of their car and they were like, there's food in that fridge and there's nobody watching it. And apparently, according to some obscure section of our local Department of Health's code of conduct, you cannot have unmanned food out on out for the public. So they shut down our fridge.
Wow.
As a result of that, we tried to get the Portchester fridge back up. I mean, we met with assemblymen and congresspeople, our local representatives, to try and get this law changed, but none of them were really interested. It was just not a big enough deal for them. But working with our close partner who facilitates the food rescue, we've been able to kind of work past that. And now we've started this freezer initiative. We actually call it the Friendly Freezer. And the community fridge is not a new thing at all, but I really haven't seen much of this freezer done by anybody else. What it is essentially is just like a freezer, a commercial freezer, and we'll take our rescued food, our meals, and we'll stock the freezer up. And because it's inside the church, we can get around that it has to be manned, and the church is free to distribute the meals. Although it takes away from the sort of anonymity of a community fridge because there's no one watching it, it's still a great way to feed the community.
First of all, I think it's amazing that you were able to sort of pivot after this kind of obscure thing happened. It's so counterintuitive because this is obviously something that's helping the community. I'm not really sure why that law exists. Like, who is it hurting? Maybe perhaps the notion is that if the food is somehow spoiled, right, then if someone gets ill from it, then who's responsible for that? But I don't know. At the end of the day, if these are folks who are hungry and who are in need of food, like, it's silly to be to say that they can't have anything because there might be a chance that it might not be good food. It's just one more tool in the toolbox that many communities use in terms of supporting those who are living marginally or experiencing homelessness. So that's disappointing. But I'm glad that I also really love that you went through your political system and tried to use the folks who are representing you and to say, like, this doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem right. It's unfortunate that no one wanted to take up the banner. I think there are probably so many other problems in the community. This was not a top priority for them, but good for you for pivoting. I think the freezer sounds amazing. But to your point, if someone needs something in the middle of the night, if the church is closed, they can't access that. So, you know, you have to be flexible and think out of the box. What are your plans for the future? Do you think there'll be more fridges that you might want to try and get out in the community?
Yeah. So, I mean, as of right now, our goal is not to necessarily start more fridges on our own. We're happy to work with other people because our original goal was to be sort of a support system. And there are a lot of really great organizations like Frege, who actually acted as our fiscal sponsor for a while. Our main focus is on teens and having teens take up the community fridge and start it on their own. And as we're teen run, we know some of the best practices and we're trying to pass that on.
And that's really important too, in terms of, you know, you're a senior in high school, you'll eventually move on, and probably the folks that you've been working with are also eventually going to move on to college. And so sustainability of the model is really important, right? You know, passing it down to other folks who can continue the work, and then they'll pass it on to someone else and that sort of thing. Because if you put something in a community and folks start to rely on it, I think you can agree that it's, you know, it would be unfair to sort of pull the rug out from under them just because you know, next September are going to go off to the next part of your, you know, adventure in your life. And I think the work that you're doing is, you know, you mentioned the teens that sort of have been volunteering for the fridges. I think hunger is a really hard thing to wrap your brain around, right? Especially if you're lucky enough to come from a home that always has enough food in the refrigerator. But of course, as you and I both know, food insecurity is really widespread. Many, many people sort of run out of funds at the end of the month and they simply don't have enough. And these are not, you know, the face of hunger is not what you think it is, right? These are not folks necessarily living on the street who are experiencing homelessness. These are folks with jobs, with homes, who go to school. Many, many American children go to school hungry. And so I think for the teens that you have volunteering who get to have this kind of firsthand experience with exactly who it is that comes and needs this help, you know, it's just, it's sort of opening their eyes and their ears and their hearts to the needs of others in a really kind of meaningful way. So I really applaud what you did there. I think it's great. I also think it's important that you did this sort of during the pandemic when we were all kind of sitting around looking at each other like, how are we supposed to help, right? And this is, you know, food is, I like to say food is love, right? So it's really, really special what you've done. Well, Charlie, can you tell us a little bit about where folks can find the Friendly Fridge Network, maybe on social media, a website, and if they had any questions about perhaps starting one in their own community, how they could reach out and sort of get your insights?
Yeah, of course. You can find us at our website, thefriendlyfridgenetwork.org. So that's thefriendlyfridgenetwork.org, and our Instagram, The Heights Friendly Fridge. And yeah, I mean, feel free to shoot us a DM on our Instagram or contact us through our website. There's some pretty good information on there to get you started, but we're always happy to answer any questions.
That's fantastic. Well, Charlie, thank you so much. We're wishing you so much luck in the college process. Certain that it's all going to work out for you. We're really grateful that you shared this information. And I think it's going to be really interesting to folks who want to do something about hunger in their community and don't even know where to begin. So thanks so much for your time. I'm wishing you the best of luck. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Simple Acts, Big Impact. If you are inspired by what you heard today, please follow, rate, and review. These things really matter to a podcast. And if you know a tween or a teen who is doing something really great in his, her, or their community, send them my way. I'd love to meet them and share their stories with a world that could really use a dose of inspiration right about now. You can get in touch with me through my website, simpleactsguide.com. Until next time, remember to keep eyes, ears, hearts, and minds open to the needs of others. And always, be kind.